Hello and welcome to The Art of Imagination. This is Tess from Jagged Edge Arts, and today I'm speaking with Welsh actor Sian Rhys-Williams, who, if you like crime, you'll probably best know as Detective Caddy John from the incredible crime noir drama Kreith, aka Hidden. If you haven't seen it and enjoy shows like Broadchurch, then it's definitely one you'll want to check out. There are three fantastic seasons, but make sure you're in a good mood, because like all good Nordic noir-style shows, it is very heavy and emotional, but so well done. Her new dramatic crime series, Stillwaters, was recently released both in the UK and abroad at the same time, so it's already available on major international streaming platforms, and it's a wonderful show about historic crime that deeply affected a small rural town, which has now present-day been brought back into the public eye. It's very well done, wonderful acting and storytelling as always, and it's great to have her here to talk about her new show, her favorite roles, and her background in the arts. So Sian, wonderful to have you here. So glad we finally got to connect.
Of course.
And it's a great time for it too, because I've just been watching your new series, Stillwaters, which just came out, and it's exciting because normally we have to wait for shows that are released in the UK. They don't come to the US until later, but it's already been released in North America.
Yeah, it seems to sort of like get to strange... Where are you?
I'm in New York.
Right. It gets to really strange little pockets of the world, and it's always constantly surprising me when I go to places and people who I would never expect to watch any of these things, and particularly like the Welsh versions of them.
Yeah.
It's always really nice. I like it.
Actually, Kreith, or Hidden, was a fantastic example of how to pull in people internationally without losing the language. Because even the international version was properly bilingual, really about half English, half Welsh, instead of just one or the other, which in my opinion made it stand out more than the other crime dramas out there, because it just really pulled you in with the use of language.
Yeah, I think it was the first one to do that.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Because it was only really Hinterland that came before it in terms of that type of genre and that type of show that then sort of traveled. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the first one that didn't have an English version. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure there's really been another one that is fully bilingual. I think it's the only one.
Wow, yeah, you're right.
And I agree. I think it's great. And I think that's what Wales is like. It's a bilingual country. You know, I've got friends who speak Welsh, but I have just as many who don't. And I have friends that speak Welsh who, depending on how I met them and through who, sometimes it doesn't feel natural to speak Welsh to, because we didn't when we first met each other. And so there's a lot of switching between the two languages that go on, depending if there's like a third person in the room that both of us happen to speak Welsh with. It's really interesting.
What's your background with the language?
I'm a fluent first language Welsh speaker. That's what I speak with my family exclusively.
Oh, nice.
All yeah. Right. I don't remember a time where I couldn't speak English and Welsh, particularly in the area that I am from, or rather the area we moved to when I was five. It's not a very Welsh speaking area. It's very English. I don't have any friends who speak Welsh from home.
Wow. Okay.
I went to a very tiny primary school with 11 children in my year who spoke Welsh. Whereas had we stayed in the area where my parents were from, there's a lot more Welsh spoken in those kind of areas. So
it's so interesting how different it is from one region to the next. I know some of the people I've spoken to said they couldn't speak English until learning it later in primary school.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Wow. No, in fact, I would say that for a long time after university and before I started working in Welsh drama, I didn't really do anything in terms of work in Welsh until about 10 years ago. And I was really frightened of it because I'd never done it. And I remember the first job that I did, and I was really frightened. And after my first day, I went home and I was crying on the phone to, I think, maybe an ex-boyfriend, going, I can't do it. Everybody else is really good at it and I can't do it.
Oh my God.
Because I'd never used it in my work, and my high school didn't even have a drama department, and they certainly wouldn't have had a Welsh
yeah, language yeah. drama department. Well, you went for drama school, you went to the Royal Welsh College.
Yeah, I did a postgraduate course there after I finished my degree. So I came back from Hull in the northeast of England, as basically as far away as possible that I could have possibly got, and came back and did a year. I mean, really, it's 8 months when you actually break it down. It's really, really wasn't very long official training.
Had you decided by then that's what you wanted to do career-wise?
Yeah, I did a drama degree at Hull University, and at the time Hull University drama department was like top three in the country, like consistently for like years.
Oh.
I'm not sure that it is anymore, but it certainly was at the time. And what they had a real emphasis on was extracurricular work. So we'd put on plays, people would write, direct. There were six main house productions every year, student directed, which had nothing to do with the grade that you got, but it was really encouraged that you would be part of it. So in a lot of ways, I had like a peer-led training before I went to drama school. And I think at 22-ish, I think I was, yeah, 22, there was probably an arrogance of going, I don't need to go and do a three-year course. I just need to go and like make sure that I'm great and get an agent.
Yeah.
So I think that's what that was.
That's
and
fair.
And also, you know, it's expensive. It's really expensive. And I'd just done a degree. But I think that's probably why I chose a short course, if I'm completely honest. I probably wouldn't do the same thing now. I might go and have a little bit, maybe two at least. But Hull University was incredible training, and so was the National Youth Music Theatre, which I did in my last 2 years of high school and then first year of university. I learned loads from my friends at university and from that experience, which was a brilliant thing to be part of.
Well, again, I'm in New York, and this country's cost of education is unbelievable. So I get wanting to expedite the process.
Yeah, totally. I was in New York like 3 weeks ago, and I understand. It definitely was like an arrogance, because certainly at university, I was lucky enough to be cast in a lot of the shows that were being done, and I felt like big fish, small pond kind of situation. So really, I mean, particularly at the time, that 8 month, 9 month course, they don't have the time to kind of, and that's nobody's fault, that's just the way that it's set up. You get there, you do a couple of terms of movement and voice, which is hugely helpful. I'm not denigrating it at all. And then you do an agent showcase, like, whereas the third years who were doing the same thing at the same time had had 3 years of excellent training, because it is a brilliant school and it continues to be a very, very well regarded one, more so now, I think, even. So I do sometimes think, maybe if I'd done like the full thing, not that it would be different, but maybe, you know, approaches to work might be different, processes might be different, but that's fine.
I would assume that you've just learned so much on the job anyway.
Oh yeah, I think that that is where you learn the majority of things.
Yeah.
Just the experience of it is really the only way with any sort of, for want of a better word, craft of any kind. You've got to do it.
Absolutely.
And learn from like watching yourself, which I hate doing.
Understandable.
And the older I get, the more I feel that way. But you do learn from watching yourself, there's no doubt about that. You learn, certainly, well, I do. I certainly go, oh God, I must remember never to do that again.
I did. I get that. As a theater actor, I like the nature of theater where you're just up there, you do your thing, and nobody ever knows it.
Something. And you're all in it together if it's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And you can all kind of laugh about it afterwards, which is always really nice.
Exactly. So yeah, acting on camera is hard, especially having to, or not having to. I know some people don't even ever look at what they've done.
And I kind of get it, because it's done. Like, what can you do? You're just going to torture yourself. I mean, I've done that plenty of times. And I have to say, there are certain things that I haven't watched in recent years. I have to really force myself. Sometimes I'll watch things twice so that I get the look at your weird face, look at your goggly eyes, why does your hair look like that? Why are you so annoying? Part out of the way. And then I can go back and watch it constructively. And instead of like beating myself up about that, I can then beat myself up about my performance.
But everybody's their own worst critic. I feel like 90%
awful.
Of the things that you would torture yourself about, nobody else is noticing.
Oh, absolutely. You're so right. And I try and tell myself that all the time. And sometimes I'm successful, but most of the time I'm not. Most of the time I can't hear it. But you're so right. It's so true.
Is it true that it took you 2 years to get work after finishing school?
Yeah, my first job was 2 years after I graduated.
Oof.
So I went home to my mom and dad's, as a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. We'd had some, like, my brother's health hadn't been great. Lots of stuff happened in those 2 years that made it definitely less of a priority in my life, and also probably like a little bit of fear. And also, I think I was auditioning for the wrong things to begin with, because I sing.
I saw that, yeah.
But I don't do musicals. And right. Very quickly, I realized that I can't bear the audition process of musicals. It is brutal, and I hadn't trained in musical theatre, and these people are amazing at what they've trained in, right? Blood, sweat and tears on a completely different level to inverted commas straight acting. And so I was going into these rooms just being completely lost, because it wasn't what I wanted to do, nor was it what I was even able to do.
Oh, so you actually auditioned for musicals?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, a little. In fact, my first job was a play with music, which they say is a very different thing to a musical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was a play with music. So there was some singing involved in that. But I was really lucky in that my agent, you know, it's a really cutthroat industry. We all know that. And I think often if a client hasn't worked in the first 2 years, they could very easily say, thank you very much, I don't think this is working out. But I was really lucky in that my very first agent went, no, I think there's something there. You've obviously had some personal stuff. Go away and deal with all of that, and let's see how we go. And so they gave me a bit of a stay of execution, I think. And then, yeah, so it took 2 years, which now I've been really lucky in that I've had fairly consistent work, at least for the last decade, right? There are times when I'm not working. There are times when it feels like I'm never going to work again. But I know that I've been lucky to have fairly consistent work that a lot of people I know are not doing. But I know that now, if I went for 2 years without any work, nothing, I think I would be like, right, well, maybe I should do something else then. Whereas like 21-year-old me was like, I'll just work in this petrol station until I get my big break. It's fine. I'll just work in this clothes shop with retired women who are doing part-time work.
Aww.
And cry in the coats because I'm sad. But that's okay, because my mum's making spaghetti bolognese tonight, and that's so good.
Oh, that's so how it is.
I mean, that does sound quite nice, actually.
Right? It doesn't sound so bad.
But yeah, I think I just had like a blind faith at that time that it was going to be okay. And then once I did get that first job, things started to sort of trickle in. But yeah, those first 2 years were very
rough.
Yeah, well, yeah, rough, but also just, yeah, yeah, rough. Yeah, it was rough.
I was going to ask how you balance persistence with realism, but I think when you're younger, it's so easy to do that because you're just like, I'm just going to do it, you know, because you don't, you know any better. And then as you mature, you're kind of like,
yeah, I think that answer changes depending on what's going on.
Yeah.
For various reasons. It's been a rubbish year. It's been a rubbish year generally for everyone, which in some ways really helps you to go, okay, it isn't me. But at the same time, I know that I'm now 43 and things change, and the landscape for women particularly, I think personally in their 40s specifically, is very difficult.
Oh, sure.
And so there's part of me that's kind of going, yeah, it's been a really shit year in the industry and it's okay and things will pick up. But then there is another part of me, which is not illogical, going, yeah, but mate, is it gonna pick up until you are old enough to play grandmas, really? Because according to the TV, you're too old to be a mum now.
That's so bullshit too.
It's so infuriating. And I could talk about this, like, I could write a dissertation about this, because at the same time, what happens with men is that the parts become more interesting and more bountiful at exactly the same time.
It is. It's really a thing.
As far as I'm concerned, I am more interesting now than I even was 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago, or, you know, and I would say that about all of my female friends. And we have more rich lives and more complicated lives for various reasons now. Like, my life is quite quiet these days, but it is also more interesting in a lot of ways. And I am, as a person, far more interesting. So it really, really, really pisses me off. But then that's just the reality. So holding fire on losing it completely and going, oh, screw this, I'm going to be an estate agent can be hard.
Oh boy, I get it.
Tricky years. And this year's been a tricky year. So for a very, very, very long time, like I'd say at least the first 15 years of my career, I was very bad at the downtime. I was very bad at finding other things to put my worth into. I get very bored. And then I will have moments where I go, why the hell have you not found a job that you can consistently go back to? You idiot. You should have just done that anyway.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. But I have, in recent years, found far better things to put my time and energy into than what I did for a very long time, which was just be sad when I wasn't working. Although I've done a lot of that this year, I have to admit. I have wallowed a little bit this year.
It's definitely been tough this year. I've heard that from a lot of people.
Yeah, it's been really bleak. It's been really bleak for everybody. I don't exclusively work in Wales. It's everywhere. It's everyone I know has had a really hard time. And I've just come off a really great year. So the sort of contrast between those two things is really stark to me. So it's been a weird year. And it's been a kind of treadmill to go, right, keep doing the things that make you feel good. Keep doing the things that just make you feel like you're not going to lose your mind to something that you can't really control anyway. So I just do a lot of pottery, like a little old man.
Yes. I saw that. I saw that you're involved in pottery. And I think that's an amazing side project. I don't know if that's something you can turn into.
Yeah, I mean, I do. Well, very sort of like burgeoning business, really. Oh, but nice. I do sell my stuff and I sell it online. I've made stuff for like some restaurants.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's still very early days and I've never done anything like that before. So learning curve. And I get very easily distracted by anything that isn't the thing I should be doing.
Oh no, I'm the same.
And even if I'd rather be doing the thing that I should be doing, I'm more likely to do a thing that I don't want to do. Right. Very strange. I don't know why.
How did you get into pottery?
Actually, it was at the end of series 3 of Cryth when I knew that I would be really, really sad because it had played such a huge part in my life, and the people particularly had played a very big part in my life for like 5 years. And they weren't going to be there anymore. And again, I was kind of like, you know, I don't have to rush to find work, but I know I'm going to be sad. So our script supervisor had been a member at a community pottery in Cardiff. And she said, oh, well, they do 6-week courses. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've always really fancied trying it. I watched the Pottery Throwdown and I love it. And funnily enough, a guy called James, who used to be in the TV industry as a runner and an AD, had given up working in the TV industry and become a pottery teacher at this community pottery that I then signed up for 6 weeks to do the 6-week course. And usually for actors, I think it's really hard to kind of commit to anything because you go, oh, well, you know, if I can't finish it, because I've got work, well, that's going to be really annoying. And then I thought, well, if I can't finish it, I can't finish it. But I can at least start it. And actually, I didn't manage to go to the final week, which was glazing week, because I did start working on the first series of The Light in the Hall. So I didn't actually finish it. But what I did do was fall absolutely in love with it and the place itself, because the community, and it brought me community. It really, really helped with my brain, because you can just really spiral when you're not working, and I can particularly. And just sitting in front of a pottery wheel, you can't think about anything else, because if you start thinking about something else, then you can't make the thing that you're trying to make. It's literally, those two things do not go together. And it's so great for that. I haven't been into my studio for far longer than I'd like, probably a couple of months. And I'm hoping to get in at the end of the week because I can feel that I kind of need it. And it's creative in a really different way. And it's got absolutely nothing to do with the industry, but it still feels really creative. And that's good because it sort of scratches that itch without you then going, oh yeah, but why am I not doing that? Because it's completely different. I love it so much. but I haven't been able to do it very much in the last few months. So I'm excited to get back to it because I think I need to center myself a little bit.
So it's like, it's therapeutic, basically.
Yeah, so therapeutic. And the people that it attracts are like really good and nice people. And it's brought people into my life that I would never, ever, ever have met who have become really good pals. And that in itself is wonderful, whether I make absolutely no money out of it whatsoever. Just having that has been really quite life-changing, actually, because I really didn't have anything like that. I really didn't have any hobbies. I like to cook food for people, but I mean, I live on my own, so that doesn't happen very often.
Right.
But this is like, you know, this was like an all-consuming hobby that came into my life at a really good time because Craith had meant a lot to me. And then it was gone. So, yeah.
That must have been hard for 3 years. I assume you were working with most of the same people during that time.
Yeah, it was 5 years altogether.
From
the
okay.
start.
Wow.
Yeah, from the start to the end. And yeah, particularly, you know, the production team, the crew were mostly the same all the way through. And of course, Sean particularly just became like a little family, really. And so many great friendships formed from that job. Sean particularly, Hannah Thomas, the producer, is one of my best mates, and it was a special time. And it's series two we filmed, my brother had just passed away, so it had become a very important emotional tie for me as well. It had meant a lot in that time to be able to be busy with people I cared about who cared about me. And I think, you know, as an actor, it can feel, or any freelancer, it can feel very lonely. But I was really lucky that that happened at a time when I could be with those people and be in a job that I really loved. So it meant an awful lot to me, that job. And it still does now. Like, if they called me up right now and said, do you want to do another one? I'd be like, do you want me to come now?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm wearing Caddy's blazer right now.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is a coincidence, but maybe it was sort of subliminal somewhere in my mind.
Well, Caddy's an amazing character, too.
Yeah, I loved playing her. Maybe I'll just wear this suit all the time just in case, like a manifestation just in case they call.
Ready to go.
I'll be like,
at a moment's notice.
Do you want to do series four? I was like, I'm ready. Just put the red boots on and we'll go. Let's go.
Oh my God. I mean, that's still one of my very favorites. I had been going through kind of a television down period as far as like,
right.
I was starting stuff and I was like, I don't care, you know, and
yeah,
I move on to the next thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was like, I really need a show that's kind of like Broadchurch where it's just this ongoing story, but with this very dark theme. And I looked up the description. I was like, all right, I'll give this a try. And I was hooked from the opening scene.
Oh, great.
And I was like, this is what I've been wanting. And then of course it was bilingual, and that was an exciting discovery as well. So
is that the first time that you'd sort of come across the language?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
As a Gaelic speaker, I didn't imagine Welsh being spoken on the level it is. And I assumed it was primarily spoken by more isolated groups of older people.
Well, I mean, there was certainly a time when that was true. I think my mum and dad's generation, a lot of my mother's cousins and stuff were not taught Welsh in the home because it wasn't like a fashionable thing to do anymore.
Oh, interesting.
Or, you know, lots of people of that kind of generation who have parents who spoke Welsh, but they don't. And I know a lot of people who's like, you know, they're like, oh, I'm really mad that I wasn't taught it. And whereas by the time I was born, that wasn't really how it was anymore. And then there's been a resurgence, and there's always kind of like attempts with any minority language within a country with a very strong majority language that there's a suppression that happens.
Of course, yeah.
But I think it's fairly stable. I think it has a slight PR issue in that I know when I was at school, so it was really interesting. So I went to a rural school, right, in the middle of Wales,
Got it.
And everyone in the school called my class, which was the Welsh speaking class, the Welshies.
Oh no.
And it's like, well, what are you then?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So there is a kind of feeling amongst people, I think, not all people, but some people who don't speak Welsh, that there is an elitism to it. Mm. And I understand why people might feel that way.
Welshies.
But there isn't. But the Welshies. So weird. But I think there are people in particularly at the moment who just don't want anything to be different, right? They don't want any difference. So maybe they're just jealous.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Welshies. It was like a real, yeah, we can really get them by calling them the Welshies. So weird. So what are you
I
then?
love that, but it's true. It is. It is. What are you? Because if you're, yeah,
And also, like, where's your
that
pride in being a Welshie then? What are you saying you are? It's very, very weird.
Yeah, I would understand that more in an urban setting,
So strange. But yeah, it's pretty stable. There's the fact that we have a Welsh TV channel. There's less funding these days. I think that is a problem. But I think the fact that it travels around the world and somebody like you's found it. And I was on a flight from Helsinki once, and this lady came up to me and was like, "Ah, I've just finished watching your show, like literally last night."
That's
And
fantastic.
I know I was sat in a restaurant in Mallorca at a bar, sort of bar seating on my own, and this couple sat next to me, and I think they were Swedish, and they were like, "Oh, it's you." And then so we sat and we ate tapas together, and it was
That is
really, it
incredible.
was so nice. And there is something about that show particularly being the show that people know me for and recognize me for, that I always feel more of a warmth about that than any other thing that I ever get recognized for, because I'm really proud of all of that for those reasons, but also I'm just really proud of that show.
I mean, it's a fantastic show. It's
Yeah.
really well done.
I think what's really interesting though is that I'm only just thinking about this now. What's really interesting is that they seem to be more popular and loved outside of the UK.
Really?
I don't mean Wales particularly, I mean the UK. I think the fact that somebody like you wants to speak to me, the fact that I met somebody on a plane in Helsinki and they're kind of gushing about it, that hasn't happened as much in, say, if I'm in Birmingham for the day, which is very interesting in itself and probably a bit of an issue because it's really high quality drama and Scottish, Irish, and Welsh stories suffer here on a mainstream level.
That's interesting to me because of how big crime shows as a whole are in the UK. Although I guess they're mostly in English, but you'd think that demographic would be more receptive to good dark dramas that are done locally.
Yeah, because outside of the UK, I guess they just go, "Oh, this show from the UK."
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas here they go, "Oh, but it's Welsh."
That's
Or,
disappointing.
"Oh, it's, where's it set? The Isle of Skye." No, it's Scottish.
Ah, see, that's sad.
Yeah.
And it's stupid. These are great shows that have beautiful, unique settings and such great atmosphere. And the inclusion of the Welsh language really adds to it. It seems ridiculous that series like that would struggle with exposure locally, but be doing well in North America, Australia, Scandinavia.
Yeah, I think if you're into watching something in a language that you don't understand, you're going to watch it.
Yeah.
It's like Squid Game is the biggest grossing Netflix drama of all time.
Is it really?
Yes, or it certainly was when it first came out.
Wow.
And that is in Korean. And
Yeah.
so most people are watching it in Korean. They're not pressing the dub button.
Oh God,
And
yeah.
I think that says so much. And I always feel really happy when I'm recognized by somebody and it's for, you call it, it's so funny. This is another thing. I naturally call it hidden because that's when I have to talk about it usually. Then what people are more likely to know it as hidden here than they are as
Of
Craig, unless
course,
they're
yeah.
Welsh and they've watched it on S4C.
Well, I went through so much to get some of these shows in Welsh because the Welsh versions are generally not available anywhere after a point. So it was a huge saga trying to track down copies. Like, a really nice stranger in England ended up mailing me his DVDs of the Welsh versions of Hinterland.
All
And
right.
I watched them and mailed them back to him in England.
Oh, perfect.
So crazy things like
I
that.
love that.
So it inspires me to use the Welsh titles over the English ones, unless it's one like Hinterland where I can't actually pronounce it. But anyway, in Kreif or Hidden, Caddy is such a great character, and it makes me happy to know that that character has a lot of meaning for you because she's awesome. I mean, she's just
Yeah,
like,
she's cool.
I think something that drives me crazy, we were talking about women in these types of shows and the inequality surrounding all that is just a whole other discussion that I don't want to go off on because I won't stop for one.
Yeah.
But
Same, same.
there's a real problem with how women are portrayed. And so when I see shows like this, where you've got a character who is really tough, really badass, but not in a stereotyped way, you know, she feels real.
Yeah, I wanted her to be like quietly all of those things. She doesn't ever raise her voice. In fact, I would say in series one, she doesn't really say very much.
There are a lot of expressions.
Yeah, she doesn't speak all that much. And I remember getting the second series, the scripts for the second series, and the lead writer had changed. And not in any way for the worse, but the lead writer had changed. And suddenly she had loads more to say. And I remember thinking, I don't know how to be her with this much to say. Yeah. So she doesn't say much. She's quite distant with the majority of people that she interacts with, but in a weirdly warm way to keep them at bay. I would be friends with her, but I think she would be a terrible person to be in a relationship with or be the sibling of.
As we did see in the show, so.
Yeah, because she just can't let herself get close, but in that sense. And actually, it's really interesting that the person that she's most comfortable with is her work colleague. And there isn't any connotation of romance between them whatsoever, which I love because there always is.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah, I know. I love that you guys had a very sibling-esque relationship with Vaughn being like Caddy's younger brother almost.
Well, and that was very much kind of like the energy between Sean and I as well. But yeah, I loved that about her, and I loved that she was just allowed to be a little bit shit at life.
Yeah.
But not in a kind of, I'm gonna go home and drink a bottle of whiskey and have sex with inappropriate people kind of way.
I hate that stereotype. I can't. It's
and I understand why it's there, because there's so much crime drama, and particularly out of the UK, we are obsessed with it. Because it sells, and I understand why we're obsessed with it, but it is everywhere. And so I do understand that you have to find a sort of hook into every, you know, the lead detective has to have some sort of flaw, right? But what I loved about her, and what I really wanted to do with her, particularly from my perspective, was to, she doesn't wear it, but it's always there. Mm. Because when shit things happen to you, you can't wear it every day for 25 years. You'd be on the floor. But it's also completely made her who she kind of is, you know, all of the tricky things that happen to her and how seriously she takes her job. And I just quite like how bold it was in going, yeah, we're just going to show a woman who's really good at a job.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly.
And she's not going to cry, and she's not going to shout. And she's just living her life, and her family are annoyed with her because she works too much.
Yeah.
And I liked that, because it was like, somehow it wasn't boring, or at least I don't think it was boring.
No,
And I wanted her to be sort of taciturn and not typically female, kind of, oh, she, you know, you've got to have it all, and if you've got it all, everything falls apart, which, you know, is an interesting thing to watch because it does happen. But she didn't have it all because the only thing she cared about was a job. That's a huge flaw in itself, right?
Yeah, but it's not done in a way that feels forced. There are just so many shows that are written by men and have this really uncomfortable stereotype of what they imagine a strong female character should be.
Mm.
And it's always way off base. And there is this tendency to create flawed female characters in a very specific way. And I like that they didn't do that with Caddy. And I also think that obviously your performance really captured something special about her. She's not trying too hard to be tough. She just is.
Yeah.
And I think that that was really special about that character.
Yeah, I actually think she's really empathetic. She's tough, obviously, because she's good at her job and wants to catch the bad guys. And therefore, just by definition, that makes somebody quite tough, right?
Yeah.
But I actually think that there is real empathy in her. But that is what I think, in, you know, the whole idea of the show is to question motivation and how somebody might end up doing terrible things, particularly series two and three. I do think it's a little bit harder to justify in series one. Even though it's a complicated situation, it's still harder. But for me, I wanted her to also be wondering that all the time.
Mm.
And so she had to be an empathetic person.
You see that? I think more than ever in the final season when she's trying to get Sean to explain why he committed that first murder, because she knows there's something going on there.
Yeah, and I also think that if you watch the interview scenes, which were always the bane of my life in the final episodes.
Why?
Two languages. And if you watch it, they were all no comment. And what does that mean? That means I have all the lines.
That's so true. I never even thought about that.
But certainly in those scenes, she's really trying to find those little pockets of empathy that she can mirror or come to them and go, I'm a person. I'm not just a police officer trying to lock you up. I want to know, particularly in series three, I think that was clear.
And that was a powerful scene.
Yeah, so I loved playing those scenes that day. They cut one. I'm like, it was probably some of the best acting I've ever done. And they cut it for time. And I was like, I spent so long on that and I was really good at it.
Oh no, that's so sad. That's the bane of good acting, getting left on the cutting room floor.
And I was like, please put it back in. And Hannah was like, we might be able to do it for the English version, of course.
No, no.
That didn't happen.
Well, it was a great job all around. Like you said, season three in particular, I wouldn't consider Sean's character to be a bad guy in the traditional sense. Mm. He was so damaged and he lashed out over what was done to him. And it was devastating. You feel for him so much.
Series three is just absolutely heartbreaking, isn't it?
And that's one of the things that makes it such a good show.
Oh, thank you. I agree. Oh, I want to make more. Oh, it always really annoys me that there aren't any more.
I wish there had been more.
Do you know what? Of everything that I've ever done, the main question I get on social media or in public, are you making any more? It's the main question I get. And I'm like, no, write some letters.
Yeah.
I think,
you never
I
know.
Think the, well, the idea was always that it was going to be three seasons. But I think, you know, things move on and there are new iterations of very similar shows within the genre that are doing it their own way and things move on. And also, you know, I like to keep moving on because sort of the point.
Yeah, of course.
Of being an actor, really, I think. So as much as I love it and would jump at the chance, I also know that going backwards, it's like an ex.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never a good idea.
No, I mean, sometimes you can get good reunion follow-ups or whatever, but I feel like in a lot of cases, and I won't name titles, but there have been series that were just pure magic. And then they kind of came back later or did a movie.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's amazing and you're like, oh, I get to follow up. And they did such a good job of wrapping it up. And then sometimes it's just like, I kind of wish they hadn't.
Totally. And also you go, why is there 9 series of this when there should have been 3?
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm a fan of not overdoing it.
Because often I think when something is really loved, often it's quite a short-lived thing. Although in the UK, 3 series isn't really that short. 3 series is quite normal and also quite a successful run. Things don't tend to kind of go on for like 20 seasons here.
Yeah.
Unless it's real institution type
soap operas.
TV. Yeah.
Actually, speaking of that, I know you had a run on Emmerdale, which is a really long series, though I haven't seen that one because I'm assuming it's a fairly local broadcast.
You'd be surprised. It's very big in Finland.
Is it really?
They have an Emmerdale fan club in Finland.
Wow.
Apparently, or certainly when I was there, it was the most exported of the soap operas in this country.
That's wild.
Yeah. Even though it wasn't the most popular here in terms of ratings, it was the most exported.
That's run for a long time.
Yeah, like 1972, I think.
My God.
Yeah, long time.
Was that your first big job or?
That was my first proper screen job, yeah. I left there 12 years ago, 13 years ago coming up, actually.
Wow.
Which is mad. And I was there for 5 years, which is a blink of an eye in the soap world.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a long time ago now.
I assume that was incredibly intense as far as the shooting schedule goes.
Yeah, it was. But because of the fact that it was my first proper telly job, I didn't know any different. And so it was a real sort of baptism of fire for me because it was like, oh, well, this is how it, okay, this is what happens then. And so I didn't really experience that whole, oh my God, it's so quick and da 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 da, because, and also like, I retain information really well and really quickly. People I've worked with and friends of mine who are actors are like, I hate you for being so good at lying. I'm like, I know it's really annoying, but I can learn lines in seconds. And so that was great for a show like Emmerdale because, you know, you're doing 12 scenes a day. Sometimes they're changing. And then the next day you've got to do another 12 scenes. So I retain information really well in that sense. But also I just was like, oh, okay, so this is how you do it here. And it's fast. And what it does really teach you is to trust your own instinct on things because nobody has time to help you with that because everybody is too busy doing their own shit and they're all pushed for time and resources as well. And people are just trying to make it the best that they can possibly make it. And so I think for the actors, I can't speak for now because I haven't set foot on that set since 2013, but back then you had to really rely on your instinct and you had to really rely on your co-worker, particularly if you were in a couple or whatever, you'd really want that to be a strong working relationship because you'd have to bounce off each other while everybody's doing other stuff around you, which you do anyway with drama. You know, you've got downtime when they're setting up lights and cameras and all of that to kind of discuss the scene. But certainly in a soap, you are in charge of your own character in a very, very different way. And I think that's a really, really great skill for an actor to be able to go, no, my gut says that this is the right choice. Or I guess you don't have time to play in quite the same way, but there's such an energy in soap acting because it's fast that it almost has its own momentum that actually does make it quite playful. And once you're kind of bedded into the character that you're playing and you can have real fun, I would spend more time being her than me for 5 years.
That's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. And it gave me some serious identity issues for a while. But you know, you get very, very comfortable in that character. And I had a wonderful time and I learnt loads, so, so much. And I also made amazing friends who are still some of my best friends today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I loved it. And I've spoken about this before. I think when I first got the job, I was like a 26-year-old theatre actress who really was looking down her nose at the idea that she was going to go into a soap. And I had a 3-month contract and I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this 3 months and then I'm going to go. And within like the first 15 minutes of being on set, I was like, oh, this is really hard. And these people are really good at it. And you can't possibly do this without being absolutely brilliant because it is so fast.
Yeah.
And very quickly I was like, oh no, I think I want to stay because I'd like to get good at this. And I'm so glad that I did. And it did. It just went in the blink of an eye.
And I would imagine a lot of stuff you learned from it made things easier later on.
Yeah, definitely. I think what's really interesting is, first of all, you become comfortable and it becomes like a second home. And secondly, you are very, not protective isn't really the word, but you're so sure of who this character that you're playing is that you can stand up for them in a different way to when you're going in for like 2 days to play a character. If at this thing that I'm doing right now, I'm doing 4 days on, there is absolutely no way that I would go in there and throw even a gram of weight around, right? Because it's not my job. Whereas when I'm playing caddy, if somebody on the crew has a problem and they need somebody to advocate for them, I'm going to step up because I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll deal with that. Don't worry, because they'll listen to me. And the same thing happens in Emmerdale is that you're like, well, no, she wouldn't say that. I said I wanted to leave and they were killing me off and they were like, so she's driving. And I was like, she hasn't got a driver's license. There was a storyline 2 years ago where she didn't pass her driving test. And I'm like, but you wouldn't have known that if it wasn't for me going, wait a minute. And I think it really taught me to be like a presence at work. It's really easy, yeah. I think, for actors to feel like they can't be, that they have to be like, oh, well, I'm really lucky to be here. And of course, that's true because work is scarce and getting that work is even harder. But you also are a professional. And that is something that annoys me sometimes about some people's attitudes to actors is that we're like massive kids. I've heard actual actors say it, which really annoys me. And I'm like, you speak for yourself. I am a massive kid, but I'm not a massive kid when I'm at work. I mean, I am in terms of fun things, but I know where I need to be. I know my lines and I read my call sheet because I'm not a child.
Right.
So I think it really taught me to be on the front foot about taking up the space that I am allowed to take within the project that I'm doing, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense. I talked about this a bit with Gwydion Reese as well. The fact that even though it's more work, it's so much easier to go into a project in a leading role or even a major recurring character than to be a guest character where you're kind of just stepping into someone else's story for such a short time.
Absolutely. It's so funny. I was talking about this literally this week on this job that I'm doing. We were talking about this. It is so much easier to play a significant role than it is to play a smaller one.
Even though the responsibility is bigger.
Yeah, it's just easier. You've got a through line, you've got momentum, you've got what happened in the previous scene and what's going to happen in the next one. The lines are always better as well. Like, it just is generally, unless it happens to be like a, a one scene cameo type thing, and that's fun. But generally speaking, it isn't that. And I've had a few smaller two line things to do in tapes and stuff. And I've been like, I don't know how to do this. And I don't mean that as in like, oh God, I'm always playing far more significant characters than this. What I mean is, there is such a skill in it. And it is a skill. It's such a skill to nail that one shot that you've got at the bullseye.
Oh, yeah.
Because, if you're the lead and you miss the bullseye in one scene, it really doesn't matter because you've got another 50.
Plus, you feel at home with the rest of the cast and crew because you're all used to each other and you're working together constantly.
Yeah, it is so much harder and it's so much less enjoyable, let's be honest, to be the person that comes in and goes, oh, hi. And it's like, it's really, really hard. I think all actors want to flesh out all the characters that they play, but how can you possibly sometimes, right? Sometimes it's like, well, you're just wasting your energy worrying about that because, you want to work. I just want to work.
Then it's understandable. But actually, on that note, that's a good segue into talking about Stillwaters for a minute, because for those who are unfamiliar, The Light in the Hall was out a little while back and you had an important part in it, but you weren't the main
I
story.
think I was in like five scenes.
Yeah, your character kind of was a catalyst.
Yeah, but I wasn't actually in it very much.
Right. And so you have taken that same character, and what they've done has basically given you a spin-off series
Sorry, it still really makes me laugh.
Carol the
Yes, that's
Butcher
literally.
has gone to become an investigator.
As is the natural
Right.
trajectory of anyone's life, right?
I actually remember when I first saw the description, I was like, oh, but she was
Yes.
a butcher. And now, okay, so now she's going to go investigate a crime.
Imagine my shock.
Yeah.
But all joking aside, though, my agent rang me and said, I've just had the weirdest phone call about The Light in the Hall. And actually, they've done quite a good job of making it a thing that could happen. She's in her late 30s. And she's had a shit time and she wants to change it. I know loads of people who have done that kind of thing and are doing it. I've done it. I've got a pottery studio, for goodness sake. So I actually think on paper it sounds like a madness, but I think they get away with it in that people do change their lives. And certainly at that age, and certainly women, she hasn't got a family, she hasn't got children, she hasn't got a husband. She has the time and the inclination and the desire to do the next thing in her life, and was inspired by seeing somebody do that. So it tracks, but when I first heard it, I had to pull over.
But I do think they made it work.
And I was certainly skeptical about it. And I was like, okay, so how's this going to work? And also, what elements of her do I bring with of the five scenes that I was in? I mean, I didn't have many clues, but the clues that I did have were pretty punchy ones in that she was always in a bonnet and carrying like a lamb steak on her back.
Best outfit ever.
So, what do I take with me? What do I
Yes.
keep and what do I expand on and what do I bring new?
Yeah.
But I do think actually it's not that far out of the realms of possibility for somebody to go, I'm only doing this because my dad owned this place. I'm just going to sell it and do what I want to do.
Yeah.
People do
Why not? Although I do think there is something to be said for the idea of her actually tracking down crime in that bonnet,
Don't talk to me about that bonnet. I can't. I have a friend who sends me a picture of myself in that bonnet like once every couple of months, and I have on many occasion considered like blocking him from my life.
I love it. That's amazing.
It kills me. It kills me so much that, to be honest, it wasn't until 2 months before I started filming series two or series one or whatever you want to call it that I could even bring myself to watch the first series because I was so vain about it. It was so upsetting to me.
It's so funny. If it was me, I would feel the same way, but just objectively,
Oh
it's
man.
hilarious.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I do often draw the short straw costume wise. It does seem to be a thing that happens. Although, unless you're playing the lead, generally speaking, the lead will have like the best coat. Whereas when I'm not playing leads, I am almost always in the shittest costume and the shittest hair and da 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 da.
Speaking of which, how did you keep a straight face playing Margaret Thatcher? I lost it when I saw
I'll tell you
that
exactly how. Pure fear is how I kept a straight face, because the whole time I was going, why am I here and what am I doing? Like, why have they asked
Like,
me?
you were perfect. You did such a good job. So, just for people who do not know what I'm talking about, there's a Welsh language movie, or primarily Welsh language movie, called, and I don't know if I can pronounce this correctly,
Try.
Isun,
Assume. Close enough. Yeah, very good.
which means the noise,
The
the
sound,
sound.
really. The noise, the sound, yeah.
I'm trying.
No, it's very good.
But yeah, so it's a wonderful movie. It's about the inception of S4C. And you appear in it in a number of scenes as Margaret Thatcher. And I watched this movie with my mother, and we were screaming because she's just like, she's amazing as Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, that's nice, because I remember when Lee Haven-Jones, the director, called me and said, would you play Margaret Thatcher in my film? And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. I said, why? I said, well, first of all, she's 15 years older than me, like at that point. Secondly, I couldn't look less like her if I tried. Even simply things like, I've got a nose that looks like it belongs to a 3-year-old and she had the opposite. Simple things like that. And I was like, why? And he went, well, she was a ball breaker. And you are. It's like, right, okay. We start filming in like 10 days. I said, Lee, what do you mean? He was like, we don't want it to be a perfect representation of Margaret Thatcher. He was like, very, very specifically, we want it to feel a little bit like a send-up of that government,
Oh,
right? He was like, we
100%.
don't, he was like, we're not interested in it being an accurate portrayal of her at all. So you'll have like one chat with the voice person, but please don't worry about any of that. But me being me, I was like, well, this is such a massive challenge. I want to nail Margaret Thatcher's voice, even if you don't need that from me. I want to at least be able to say for myself that I've done that. But then I was like, oh, what are you doing with makeup and stuff? Because obviously I am a decade and a half younger than she was, and she has these very prominent teeth and a massive nose. And he was like, no, we're not doing anything like that. Nobody's being aged. Nobody's having any prosthetic, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, fine. So I go on set. Mark Lewis Jones walks in with caterpillar eyebrows and a grey wig. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought nobody was getting aged in here. So that's just my face with Margaret Thatcher's wig on.
It's
Anyway,
so funny though. It's that's what
yeah.
makes it so good.
It's wild. What a weird thing to be able to say that I've done.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I can't, I've only watched that once, and it might be worth me watching it again so that I can get an objective idea of how well I really did.
Oh, I think it was great, just objectively.
Because I think a lot of people have been kind about it because they're my friends, and it's quite an exposing thing to ask an actor to do, is to play Margaret Thatcher. It's a hard one. I think a lot of people have done it, and some people have nailed it, and some people really haven't, and so it's scary. And so I wonder at how kind people have been when they've told me that they thought it
Well, I'm telling you, we were both like, this is perfection. This is just so
was
good.
good. Well, I'll take that. I'll take it. Thank you.
It was just fantastic that they cast all Welsh speakers as the snobby government people.
Yeah, I think that was very much the point, really.
Absolutely.
It's a great film. It's a really,
It
really fun
is.
film. And also a thing that happened that is appalling. In the 70s, not even in like the 1870s, do you know what I mean? Like,
But it
cool.
tackles a very serious subject with such humor, and anyway, sorry, that's off track, but that was, I just had to comment on that when you started talking about appearances and stuff, because that was so, that's just, and
Wild.
I didn't even recognize, I didn't even know it was you. And
Oh,
then my
good. Well,
mother
that's
was
good.
like, oh, isn't that the police officer from Hidden? I was like, who? And I
That's
was like, oh
funny.
my God, it is her.
Oh, well, that's good. That's great. But yeah, that was probably the wildest thing that I've ever done. It was fun, though. Really fun. Really fun.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Looping back around somehow to Stillwaters, that series has a very different feel from The Light in the Hall. It's intimate in the way the first series was, but in a totally different way, because instead of dealing with just a couple of interconnected people, it's dealing with the trauma and history of a whole town. And as always with these shows, it really keeps you guessing. We can't get into spoilers. We don't want to get into spoilers, but was it difficult to revisit and really flesh out that character in such a new atmosphere with a whole different group of characters?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It was something that I was constantly thinking about. Because with this particular character and the particular way in which she's reinventing herself, right? So she is slightly different. She has to be different to the person that she was in series one because she's trying to change her life and doing quite a good job of it as well. You know, it's happening, she's doing it. But at the same time, you want to hold on to certain characteristics that you had from the previous series. But she was only in five scenes or so. So it was interesting in that there were moments where I had to really have a word with myself and go, it doesn't matter. It's okay. It doesn't matter because nobody will remember what you did in scene three of episode five. You can let that go and concentrate more on who she is today. I think when you meet her in series one, she sort of has a lightness to her. She's slightly haphazard. She's a little bit of a joke character, I suppose, when you first meet her. And I know that they didn't want that, but what they did want was like a lightness in her that they didn't have in the first series. And I think how I managed to find that was she is way out of her depth, right? Because she's just a student and she's trying to get this job that she probably isn't really qualified for, and she's trying to investigate this story that she doesn't have the experience for. But while she's doing it in a slightly haphazard way that probably a slick person who's been doing it for 10 years wouldn't do it. But she's discovering that she's good at the thing that she wanted to be good at. And so there's a joy that happens, like if she manages to get somebody to agree to speak to her, or if she manages to get some information out of somebody in a slightly covert way, then there's a thrill in that for her, like in a private moment, which I love because you don't see that with that character in those types of shows. Caddy wasn't that. Caddy's cool. She knows she's good at what she does and she knows who she is. Generally speaking, the main investigative character in those types of shows, they're not the emotional heart of something, which is fine. That's something that you let go. Your ego goes, okay, I'm probably not going to win any awards for this because I don't cry, but that's fine.
No.
But you do, you have to go, oh, fuck. All I do is stare at a computer screen, but fine, it's okay. But she isn't that. She's more human in that sense of going, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. Oh my God, I've just managed to get that person to give me a piece of information that I really needed, kind of thing. And I think that's really refreshing because you don't see that with that character. They're always super slick. They ask the right questions. They lose their temper at the right moment to get what they want. Da 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 da. They're rehearsed, whereas she hasn't got a clue what she's doing. And I think that's a lovely thing to watch. Somebody sort of stumble their way to success, but also clearly has a kind of aptitude for it because, in a way, her stumbliness and her affable nature is the reason that people talk to her because they're underestimating her all the time. And because they underestimate her all the time, they let their guard down. And she starts to notice, I think, as the show goes on, that that is her strength, that people are always going to underestimate her. So let them, and I'll get what I need from you because you'll be on the back foot.
Interesting.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart.
And very different.
Yeah, and I think that's the only thing I could really bring with me because I couldn't bring the butcher.
Right.
There's a lightness to her, but I didn't feel that she should be a comedy relief character. And that's how I went about finding it, was just making sure she had that layman's personality, I
Right.
guess, of kind of going, oh, okay, I'll follow you in here and I'll bring my notepad kind of thing. So yeah, it was a real challenge and I really enjoyed it. Because, you know, when you come back for series two of anything, there's a change in the character. Stuff has gone on between the seasons usually. Doesn't usually pick up where it left off, or it does sometimes, but often there'll be like 6 months and something major's happened in their lives. And so there's always a change and there's always like an evolution. But with that, it was a really unique task to kind of find what was really at the root of her, even just from five scenes, but also find more interesting stuff that lends itself more to the lead character because it has to be interesting and it has to be layered because you're just going to get sick of looking at that person if it's just a bumbling butcher. It has to be more.
Yes. Oh my God.
Well, in the first series, it was like, what do you need? A bumbling butcher. Fine, okay. Because that was her place in that. And then suddenly, very much not. So it was a challenge, but it was a great one. I really enjoyed it. It's a very unique challenge to have had. It's not really something that I think I will ever have to do again.
From bumbling butcher to crime investigator.
I can't imagine. Maybe Cryth series four will be. So Caddy's a hairdresser.
I love it.
And there's a murder upstairs in the flat above.
Oh my God, that's such a good premise. And is Still Waters, on a more serious note, is it at all inspired by a true story? Because I remember reading something about this kind of conflict with a dam.
Throughout the 20th century, but I don't remember when exactly. A lot of Welsh villages were flooded to build reservoirs for English cities.
Okay, so that's a thing.
So it's a thing,
Wow.
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a big thing actually. There's a very famous piece of graffiti that is on a wall and it's sort of like a red painted wall, and then it's got Cofiwch Tryweryn, and Tryweryn was one of the villages, very famously, was drowned to make a reservoir to facilitate Liverpool with water, and then they never even used it.
Jesus.
So Cofiwch
What?
Tryweryn means remember Tryweryn, basically.
That's insane.
It's a really iconic piece of Welsh folk art, I guess you could call it.
No, I haven't seen that. I'll look that up.
It kind of pops up in all sorts of places with different things to remember, and it's kind of like really iconic. But yeah, it's very much a thing that happened.
So this isn't based on a specific incident, but it's just like generally inspired by the historical concept of.
Yeah, the backdrop of the story is that reservoir is being expanded and it tore a community apart in the first place, and da
Interesting.
da da da. Yeah.
Wow. Well, it just came out, and I'm halfway through the show now, and I'm very excited to finish it.
Yeah. You'll have to let me know if you guessed who it was.
I will.
I'm really interested. So far, nobody I've spoken to, although I haven't spoken to that many people, but nobody who I've spoken to who've watched it guessed, which I love.
I'm gonna think about that. We'll see how it all plays out. See if I get it right. I'll let you know.
Okay.
And on that exciting cliffhanger, we'll wrap it up here.
Oh,
I'm so glad we finally got to connect.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It was lovely, and I'm glad we finally managed to do it.
Yeah, it's been so nice. I love having these conversations. Now you've got me thinking extra hard about this. I'm gonna have to binge watch
Well, worse things to do, surely.
the rest. Well, I know you're working on some things now, so best of luck with your upcoming projects. And I can't wait to finish the show, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Thanks so much. Bye, Tess. Bye.
The Light in the Hall Season 2 Still Waters is out now, streaming on Amazon, AMC, Apple, Acorn, and all the usual suspects, so check it out. And of course, give Season 1 a look as well if you haven't seen it yet. As always, I've included a whole lot of links to trailers and streaming sites in the description for various work that Sian's done, and I highly encourage anyone who hasn't seen these to add them to your list because Wales has so many good productions going on, and I just cannot recommend them enough. They're really, really good shows to kick back, wrap up in a blanket, and binge watch. So don't miss out. Check them out. And with that, we'll say goodbye for now. Thank you once again for listening to The Art of Imagination, and I hope you'll join us again next time.